Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey Podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good, Bruce. And we're heading into a part of the season, at least when it comes to reporting on Oilers-related hockey games, that only the really hardcore faithful are going to be sticking with us. But that's okay, because we're now delving into the fortunes of the Edmonton Oilers farm team in Bakersfield. And for however long they're in the playoffs, we're going to do our podcast. We're going to grade the games. We're going to do scoring chances, truncated a little bit, just looking at major contributions, and follow along and see where this takes us. And Bruce, I had a very kind of strange experience. Usually when I watch the Bakersfield Condors, I'm just looking at this player or that player. I don't really care about the outcome of the game. But the other night they were playing, I can't remember who they were playing. I was watching the game and grading the game. I've graded two of the last games, and you wrote about the final game of the year. And it was a game that the Condors had to win to finish first. And I actually felt myself getting, like I do with an Oilers game, really excited and also aggravated by bad plays. Right. And pretty picked off if they let in a bad goal, following it kind of like I do the Oilers. Mm-hmm. So I'm into this. I'm up for this, Bruce.
Yeah, well, I joined in last night, and they'd already clinched first place in the division, but they still have first place in the West up for grabs. And, you know, what that means, I mean, there's not really any title or anything, but it means if the favorites, home favorites, advance through the division series, that the Condors would have home ice advantage in the conference finals.
Over the Chicago Wolves.
You might as well get that advantage if it's there to be had.
Cool.
So they needed to get 1 point last night, and they came from behind. They were down 2-1 after the second period, and came from behind and scraped out the 3-2 win, and were well deserving of it. They outplayed Stockton Heat. They outplayed Stockton quite significantly. Outshot them 13-6 in the third period, and earned the win and earned the first place. Good on them.
The reason I'm excited is, I mean, other years I watched Bakersfield in the playoffs, haven't been this excited. I mean, I've been interested, but this is a really exciting year, because the Bakersfield team, I think they had a goal differential of 60 goals this year, something like that.
Almost 60, third best in the league.
And that's really significant. There's only a few teams every year in the AHL that have that kind of goal differential. It really marks a team, generally speaking, that has got a lot of talent, and usually it turns out young talent. You know, some of these veteran teams do well in the AHL, but what we see in the last 5 years, and I did a post on this a while back, is these teams that have these kind of incredible goal differentials in the regular season, they tend to promote between three and as many as 10 players in following years to the NHL. Mm-hmm. So there could be, Bruce, it's not out of question, that as many as 10 of these players on this Bakersfield team are going to make it to the NHL and stick around for a little bit at least. And usually these teams have one or two really good players. So that's what's exciting, is to see how these players, we have an idea which are going to be the really good ones and have a chance to be the really good ones, how they're going to do in this huge test of the AHL playoffs. And if they can extend this, I think it will accelerate their path to the NHL. So what I'm going to suggest we do today, Bruce, is go through the team, meet the Bakersfield Condors, and go through them line by line and talk about each line a little bit and each defense pairing. So we'll start with the top line, and that's made up of Tyler Benson, Cooper Marody, and Josh Curry. So Bruce, why don't you dig in? You can start with Curry. Might have been hurt. We all know him from his other games, and I was just going to check. I'm just going to go on Twitter now and see if Bakersfield any up. I don't think they will, but
yeah, he went down. That was in the game I did last night, and he went down halfway through the first period. Unfortunately, that was the whole first period. There was no audio on the AHL Live, so I was just watching. It was like watching a silent movie, and I saw the collision. And I went, "Well, that doesn't look good." And then he stayed down for probably 2 or 3 minutes, and they picked him up, and he kind of groggily went off. It was just a mid-ice collision off a face-off play, and didn't really look like much. And then he's going down the tunnel, never to return. So now it was the last game of the season. They were already sheltering some players. Like, they didn't make some players even take the trip. They had to use some guys, and unfortunately one of the key players they used last night got hurt in the first period, and it's the last thing you want to see. Last game, as Oilers fans know well, I don't like seeing guys get hurt in the last game of the season.
Can you get a little, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Bruce. Could you get a little closer to your mic? Thank
you.
Thanks.
There we go. Profit nice points?
Look. Yeah, it was just, yeah, it just seemed like a little quiet. And my... Okay. My sound's turned right up. Okay. So what I'm going to say is this line at the AHL level is a dominant line, one of the dominant lines in the AHL. I mean, if they had played the regular amount of some AHL teams play 68 and I think others play 74.
76 games. 8 games difference, like 10% of the schedule.
So if Marody and Benson had played, they would have been in the top 10 scoring for sure. Benson, 66 points in 68 games, which is a 20-year-old starting out as a 20-year-old, is fantastic production for the AHL. I mean, this really marks him as the top young forward Oilers prospect in the system right now. I think might have more value right now than Jesse Puljujärvi in a trade. Definitely has more value than Kyler Yamamoto right now. More value than Ryan McLeod. Like, he's the one. And he really came through in a big way this year. When I watch his game, I don't see a particularly speedy skater, but I do see an agile player who has tremendous, tremendous, tremendous on-ice vision, can really thread the needle with passes, a decent shot, and strong on physical play. Good on the boards, good in tight spaces. Looks, Bruce, like, and you don't want to, and it's so easy to get ahead of yourselves when you're talking about it, for me at least, because I'm optimistic about the Oilers by nature, but it's so easy to see him fitting in well with a really highly skilled NHL center like Draisaitl or McDavid, because he doesn't need the puck, but he really can play, he can really work with a player who can handle the puck. And that's on this line, it's Marody. Who at the AHL level, Bruce, I made the comment in a post last week. He reminds me, he's kind of like the Patrick Kane of the AHL, the way he kind of whips through the players, puck on his stick, no one can touch him in the offensive zone. Marody at this level, Bruce, he's a dominant attacker. Mm-hmm. I don't know what your impression was last night, but.
My impression last night was that line had a kind of quiet game, and I mean, they lost their right winger early, so they were adapting to a new guy. Who was like a PTO signing about 2 weeks ago. And I thought a little bit they were quiet. I think that's fair. And even then, like Marody, he made a few plays with her. Wow, he made that look easy. Or the puck came to him and it was on his stick for like a millisecond and it was gone. It was gone in the right direction to the right guy. Like, he really moves the puck smart. And, you know, not necessarily a 50-foot pass, but he distributes. I call him a distributor of the puck, and I really admire that quality in the center especially.
Yeah, he can really fly. And Curry at this level is a real sniper. He's just an opportunistic player. We saw that in the NHL. He had a nose for the net, and he's at this level, I mean, he's 27 now, and he's a veteran, and he's really strong. Hey, Bruce, you might want to check the settings of your mic. Maybe you're using your internal mic, not your Blue Snowball. Would be my own.
Okay.
That wheel at the top of your page there. And I'll just keep going here. The second line is their top shutdown line, top two-way line. And it's also made up of players that the Oilers know well, Oilers fans know well, and that's Brad Malone, who is, let me just get his age. He's a veteran player. And he is now, he's 29. Joe Gambardella, who is 25. And the third member of that line is Patrick Russell, who is now 26. So these are all veteran players. Gambardella and Russell had long college careers. And at the AHL level this year, Gambardella and Russell are just cooking. They're just solid, strong two-way hockey players. The coach, Woodcroft, Jay Woodcroft, has been raving about them all year in terms of their ability to go against top opposition. So the Oilers are, the junior Oilers, the Condors are really set when it comes to playing top competition, because they have this strong attacking line, but then they have this second line. And at this level, Brad Malone is so much more confident and capable with the puck to make a play. So I really like the second line too.
Yeah, they sat out that entire line last night, so I can't tell you much about them and how they're playing together in Bakersfield, because I really haven't been following, like visually following. I've been following the Connors more by, radio reports and following the stats and stuff and seeing them play. But, of course, all three of those guys were up with Edmonton. So, and you know what, that guy Patrick Russell, he's a real good player. He's not going to score a million points, but he can play. And I liked him when he played with Edmonton. I thought he held his own when he played a handful of games, and he was basically no points, even, basically just up and down player. But he was like plus 30 for Bakersfield this year.
You know, between Gambardella, Curry, and Russell, the Oilers are going to need some value contracts next year, Bruce. And between those three guys, if you say to those three guys, okay, we're keeping one spot on the fourth line, and maybe even two, if a couple of you really push hard, we're keeping one spot open, and one of you guys is going to make the Oilers. I mean, I just think this is exactly who you want on your fourth line. Really super accomplished AHL players, about 25, 26, who are desperate, absolutely desperate to make their mark in the NHL, willing to do anything. And the Oilers have three of those guys. Pick the one or two most desperate of those guys, and you have the makings of a fourth line that's going to play hungry all year long. And that's what I'm hoping to see and get a sense of it in these playoffs. Let's go to the third line. So that's a really interesting line as well, because not only do the Oilers have this kind of second two-way line of Gambardella, Malone, and Russell, but the third line is a very similar kind of line, and it's made up of a guy on an AHL contract, Evan Poli, who's a great, big, tough hockey player with a bit of skill at this level, at least. We also have Mitch Callahan, who really, for a year and a half, didn't look like he was up to much in Bakersfield after being on a really good team in Grand Rapids, a championship team. But he's really come on and is playing physical hockey right now. And the third member of that line is another AHL contract, a little Espo, Luke Esposito, who is 25, 5'10", 183 pounds, according to HockeyDB, and he's from Andover, Massachusetts, and he's a really feisty role player on this team who helps kill penalties. So I like this line as well. And Evan Poli might earn a NHL contract, I think, based on his play. He can fight, but he's got a bit of skill. And we'll see. I mean, I think he's, in terms of his skill level, it's kind of hard to tell, because at this level he can make plays. Is he better than Zach Stortini? Maybe. Is he better than Milan Lucic right now? Possibly.
Is he the rich man's Cale Kessin?
Boy, that name, for some reason, I can't even remember I remember the bad trade. It was for Tobias Rieder. That's a stab through the heart.
It's a bad trade today, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look so bad. It's one of those, there's some names that you just say it as like a stab through the heart of an Oilers fan. For a second, sometimes you can't even remember why, but there it is, man. It's going to be like years from now, someone's going to say Ryan Strome. It's going to be, or Brandon Manning.
He's still in the CHL, Cale Kessin. He's on the cusp.
He is a Cale Kessin still playing. So the fourth line, Bruce, is made up of players like, it's going to be a mix of players. Well, we haven't talked about Kyler Yamamoto, who's been, this is a wrist injury, Jim Matheson was saying today. He's played 27 games in the AHL this year. Mm-hmm. What was it, 15? NHL. He's had two kind of injury-filled years. So there's Yamamoto, who can obviously break into this lineup on any of those lines. There's also a really interesting player by the name of Dave Gust. And I don't know how he played last night, but man, this guy, he's a little guy. He's 25 years old now. He can't be really considered a pro prospect, but at the AHL level, he could help this team win. He can make plays. He really hustles. The coach loves him because he uses him on the power play, on the penalty kill, if I recall correctly. And I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the playoffs that he's on one of the top three lines at all.
Well, last night Esposito didn't play. He was another guy they sat out. So they had a line of Tyler Vessel with Poli and Gust. So two guys on AHL contracts, and Vessel's on a one-year ELC because he's 24 years old. So they're all playing for an NHL contract next year, and that, they're pretty decent players. They certainly hold their own. Like, they were a very good sort of hustle line last night, and they scored. Like, say, Gust got the game-winning goal on a nice 2-on-1. Poli fed him, and Gust roofed it.
Yeah, Gust can shoot. He's a player. I mean, he's not that far off from the group of Gabardella, Curry, Russell. He's not quite in that category, but he's not far off. He's not far below them in terms of performance at this point. And good for him. Like, I don't know what conversation he's worked himself into, but he's worked himself into the conversation for Bakersfield for next year, put it that way. I guess this September he was sitting at home without a contract and didn't know where he was going to play, and then he got a late call to come to Bakersfield. So good for him. Bruce, defense. First pairing, Caleb Jones, William Lageson. What say you?
Yeah. What say I is I really like both players, and I really like William Lageson. Keep seeing him good. And last night, he's looking so much calmer and more poised with the puck and making good plays. Last night he made a gorgeous cross-ice pass where he got the puck at the point and he had it on the boards and he had a second to look up and he picked the guy at the bottom of the far circle, put it right on the tape, bang, in the net. And Braden Christopher, I mean, if you set it up where Braden Christopher can miss, he probably made a pretty good pass. And it was a beauty. But then, and there was another play, and I wrote about this too, and it was just, he just made it look so good. It was like a 2-on-2, and the guys were wide, and his guy had the puck, so it really was kind of like a 1-on-1. And before they even got to the blue line, he just stepped up, took the puck right off the guy, separated, and he had a second. He looked up, bang, puck was on the tape of a Condor going north. And it was, you know, a hard, like he had to look quite a bit to his right, but he found the right guy, and he was moving with puck going north, which is something we need to see on the Oilers.
Now, I've seen about 7 or 8 Bakersfield games this year, Bruce, and I haven't seen a lot of Ethan Bear. So I'm going to, I can't comment so much on him. I guess he's been playing well. But from the players I've seen a lot of, the three best NHL prospects on this team are Tyler Benson, Caleb Jones, and William Lageson. And Lageson has really impressed me as well, especially this last time I've been watching him. Big, strong, steady, positionally sound, who can move the puck. And his skating isn't nearly as good as Jones. But what you see from Jones at this level a little bit is sometimes he's not quite there positionally, but his skating gets him out of trouble.
Right.
He is a fantastic passer. He's just at this level, he just moves the puck so well. That pairing, is there a better pairing in the AHL right now? I wonder. Those guys are a huge part of this team. And they're both tremendous prospects. They could easily both be on the Oilers next year, one on the third pair and the other as the seventh D-man. I mean, there's no sense in keeping them in the AHL. They're both, I mean, Lageson, what's he? He's 23. Played a lot of time in Sweden.
He was drafted in 2014.
He's 23. He turned 23 in February. And Jones is... he'll be 22 in this is, and he's full, done his second year in the AHL. He'll be 22 in June. So, Bruce, this is going to be. I want to see how these guys do under some real intense pressure in the playoffs. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, William Lageson, I mean, his stats this year: 67 games played, so he only missed one game. 8 goals, 19 assists, 27 points, including 0 points on the power play. So he basically earned those points. It's not like he's piling up second assists on the power play, like sometimes you see on a D-man. Plus 25. And I know plus minus. And you know what? I only believe part of that stuff. And I trust it. It's my bellwether for a goal differential. It's like the canary in the coal mine, right? the guy's minus 30. Sorry, your canary died. You're going to have had a crappy season.
Generally speaking, that's a fair comment. Not always, but generally speaking, it's a warning something's gone wrong. I mean, one of the top prospects in this draft, that kid from Kootenay, is like minus 50 this year, Bruce. So not every scout.
No, I know. There's a certain common sense logic, right? I mean, some teams look like the daily temperatures in the Northwest Territories. Well, in February, you know, everybody's a big minus, and you know, there's ice time concerns and so on. On the other hand, this is a team with a big plus, and it floats all the boats. They got 13 guys at plus 10 or higher. They got 20 guys at plus 5 or higher on this team. 20 guys, and you know, they're scoring as a group.
I got to go check. Turn off the oven. I got the shepherd's pie cooking there, Bruce. My specialty. Okay. I'll be right back.
All right. I'll keep talking while David goes and turns the shepherd's pie off about how the Condors have been just an outscoring team all year. And we talked about the plus 60. And, you know, David, Bakersfield, because they played 68 games, it didn't show up as a big number. But goals for, they scored more goals per game than any other team in the NHL.
Yeah. Brody's plus 31.
Yeah, he's a very, very good. And Patrick Russell, we talked plus about earlier, 30. On a different line, plus 30.
51 games, yeah.
But you want to talk about balanced scoring. Like they got the two rookies at the top of the pops, 66 and 64 for Benson and Marody. But here, power play goals. Here's the power play goals of the Bakersfield Condors. Kari Yamamoto, 6. Josh Curry, 6. David Gust, 6. Mitch Callahan, 6. Cameron Hebig, 5. Joe Gambardella, 4. Cooper Marody, 4. Caleb Jones, Patrick Russell, Logan Day, 3 each. 10 players with 3 power play goals or more. Compare and contrast your Edmonton Oilers, where the entire second unit scored 3 goals the entire season. 3 goals from the entire unit.
They need it.
They're doing something right in Bakersfield that they're not doing in Edmonton. They're moving the puck. One of those things.
Okay, so their second pairing, Bruce, if Ethan Bear's back, and I suspect he will be, I mean, that's – Jay Woodcroft's really quiet. Like, he's really cagey about talking about injuries, though. I mean, he's very – he plays the McClellan game very well. He's very circumspect. But if Bear's back, that'll be Bear and, I believe, Ryan Stanton will be the Baron Keegan Lowe will be the second pairing. And Keegan Lowe at this level is a he's just a gritty, solid, fairly effective player. He's an effective hockey player. Kills penalties. He takes the body a lot. He and Ryan Stanton are kind of very similar players. The two more veteran defensemen. They're just and I like Stanton a little better than Lowe. Actually, I think Stanton's a bit more mobile, a bit more effective as a player, and he's a really solid defenseman. And so he teams up with Logan Day, who's kind of erratic, I find. Mm-hmm. In terms of his defensive play, puck mover, but sometimes has those, I don't know what would Yanni Pitkinen kind of Pat Price moments on the ice where you just wonder, like, what the hell are you doing, buddy? Like, don't do that. You know, you're not covering anyone and you're not, and you're kind of floating around there. You're in the red light zone, as I call it. Like, so Logan Day spends a little bit of time in the red light zone. And, But Bear, again, I haven't seen him, but he is, I think, an exceptional player at this level. So I'm hoping to see him healthy because he's going to be right in the running there as well. And this is a huge time for Bear, Lagesson, and Jones. Like, who's going to come out in this playoff? Who's going to really step up and show, like, I'm the guy. I'm the one that you're going to have on your third pairing next year. Now, there could be two spots, possibly, you know, and they're also going to be in competition with Bouchard and Pearson next year. So huge competition. So this time, that's why I'm excited, Bruce. Like, man, we're going to see some real internal competition. Now, Lagesson and Jones both play, they kind of alternate on the right side and left side. They kind of flip back and forth together, like they're in the same play. You know, they can flip back and forth. So they have that going for them. And Bear is on the right side. So, yeah, I'm pumped. They're goalie. Shane Spirit.
I'll let you talk about him. I saw the backup last night. I saw start?
Well, let's start with Shane Starrett's stats. 42 games, 27 wins, Bruce, and 14 losses. His save percentage is .918. Now, I don't know what the average AHL save percentage is. Maybe you have to do a post on that. See how
27 wins and 12 losses, only 7 of them in regulation. 27, 7.
Well, isn't there 5. Two ties there that are really losses?
27, 7, and 5. So 12 losses all together and only 7 in regulation. So he played 39 decisions and he got 32 points in 32 of those games.
So you know what he's like? He's this great big guy. He's huge. He's 6'5". But he reminds me of Cam Talbot in terms of his calm in the net. He's a very kind of move here, make the save very efficiently, move there efficiently, move there efficiently, move there efficiently. When he's on his game, he's not making any big sprawling saves or anything like that. He's just there. Solid in the net. Stop at the
point. When he was good. When he was good, Dubnyk was like that.
So I like him.
Yeah.
Just going to look at the goalie stats and see where he ranked for save percentage here, Bruce. Okay. A little complicated because why didn't they put that in order? Here we go. Okay. So of the goalies who played a lot, he finished 5th, Bruce. Fifth. The top one was a guy called Chris Dreger. 924 and shots at 918. And guess who's just tied with Starrett is the Colorado goalie they're going to be facing. Another blast from the past. Pavel Francouz.
Yeah, I remember that. Bruce? Yeah, well, he's the guy that was signed the day after Oilers paid $2.5 million for Mikko Koskinen. Francouz, who had, I think, the same save percentage in the KHL last year, signed with Colorado for $690,000. People are thinking they could have got the bargain contract, and instead they overspent on Koskinen. And Francouz has spent the whole year in the minors, and not so much Koskinen came and made the NHL right away.
Well, Francouz had an excellent year in the AHL.
Yeah, he's good.
And so does Shane Starrett. So I think the Oilers are the Condors, the Junior Oilers are going to get some good goaltending. The one interesting thing, Bruce,
in the Spengler Cup, he's a good goalie.
Is that right? Yeah. The one interesting thing, Bruce, the Oilers farm team may be joined. And I don't know how this could work. Like, I don't know how exactly this works. Do you have to be on the roster at the end of the year to join an AHL team? Like, if you're coming from junior, like if you're eliminated from the playoffs, like your Dmitry Samarukov or Kirill Maximov.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is, I don't think the only player I could actually see.
Kale Makar.
Yeah.
He's going to be going to the Colorado Eagles.
No.
Right for the NHL.
Well, Evan Bouchard.
The thing. There's no rules that say you can't add a player when they're.
I think Evan Bouchard might come. If they get knocked out, he'd be the only player I actually think who would get any ice time. I don't think anyone else would. Maybe Ryan McLeod in a fourth line, but I don't see Maximov busting in. So to this group. So,
well, last night I saw the fifth line play because the second line was left in Bakersfield, and they were good. I mean, there was no weak line in last night's lineup. Like the team, like they played a real consistent kind of team game. Not really quite impressed me about them.
Yeah, Labrie and Vesey, Stukel, they're all decent players. So yeah, they got a lot of depth. So I think it's going to be really hard if any of these junior players come down, other than Evan Bouchard. I could see Evan Bouchard. They're playing a guy called Jake Kulevich in their third pairing right now, and he's kind of a Jason Strudwick defenseman, a little slow on the skates, but smart and aggressive. He's playing with Bear out. So,
right.
In theory, someone could bump him, but that will be.
They got Brandon Manning, David. Brandon Manning played last night.
How do you look?
Well, he looked like an AHL defenseman. I mean, take that how you will, but I mean, he certainly didn't stink at that level. And he was filling in because they sat Ryan Stanton, for the last game of the season. and they wanted to give everybody on the roster a game. I'm sure of it. So they didn't prioritize the winning so much as they wanted to. They wanted to give all the guys that have been in the press box, because they might need them in the playoffs. So give them a game. They rested a few of their older guys, and even with their sort of B team, which is what we saw last night, they were cooking with gas. They had the legs going and the forecheck going, and they didn't. They were very positionally sound. Like, that was one thing that really stood out.
So I understand, Bruce, that the games are going to be on Oilers. The Oilers are going to live stream these games on their website. Is that the case or not?
Well, I thought that was the case. And then the Condor's website or Twitter feed sent me a tweet telling me that was incorrect, that only AHL can stream, and it's $25 for a playoff package, which is $60 for a regular season package. So that seemed like... it's not a ridiculous price or anything. But I listened in on the game last night, and they said they'll be streaming. They'll be on Oilers TV on Oilers.com website. And so it didn't sound like they were talking about just the radio feed, but whatever. Anyway, I got it wrong, apparently, because I assume Condor's not what they're talking about.
That could be a mistake sometimes, man. You're just doing your best. You're just giving the reliable information as you hear it. Sometimes.
I heard it. Yeah, that's what I heard. Now maybe I heard voices in my head again.
Let's not talk about that on the air, Bruce. All right. Well, Bruce, let's leave it there. We'll next podcast will be after the first game. Is it Thursday or Friday?
First game, yeah, Friday, Saturday they play this weekend. Right. Both in Colorado, and they played the first two on the road and three at home. And did the sound ever get better, or has it been bad?
It's kind of, you're sounding a little soft. Like, I think that we're going off your built-in mic rather than your Blue Snow.
My apologies. We'll get that fixed for next time.
Okay.
And I got a huge rant in me, but I'm going to give you the real short version. Finland got screwed yesterday at the World Women's Hockey Championship, and hockey got screwed, and it's an embarrassment to the game of hockey how that Women's World Gold Final came down. What an absolute fiasco. I'm embarrassed for my sport.
The Women's World Pro Final?
Women's World Gold Medal Final.
Oh, Gold Medal Final. Who was playing in the game?
Finland and the United States. Finland upset Canada on Saturday.
Wow.
Got to the final. They took the game to overtime. Finland scored in overtime, and then they had a 10-minute. They celebrated. All the helmets and gloves and sticks went flying, and the girls piled up in the corner for 2 or 3 minutes. And then they decided, well, we better have a video review of the goal. And they took about 10 friggin' hours to do a video review. And then they finally decided that it was no goal against Finland and a penalty against the United States against the goalie for diving into the player that she contacted. The refs on the ice got it right. Video review took forever, got it wrong. They overturned and overthrew a historic moment in the history of women's hockey. No European team has ever won. And guess what? The game went to a goddamn shootout to be decided. And, of course, the other team won it. And it's just not right. My wife just sat in the corner. Well, not in the corner. She sat at her place at the table, and she was just shaking her head. She's gone. It's not right.
Oh, that is so
brutal. Despicable on every level.
Oh, that's horrible. This is great news. Great news that Finland can finally, there's a team, eh? Finally, there's a team that can compete with
them. It's so hard to score in women's hockey. Well, let's make it harder. I mean, the goalie stole the rebound. The puck was like 3 or 4 feet outside the crease. She tried to dive on the rebound. The Finnish players swerved, but they collided. And another Finnish player came and bumped in the rebound. But basically, the goalie was diving into the path.
If it's outside the crease, it's a free puck, isn't it? Like
3 or 4 feet outside the puck. Anyway, check out my Twitter line. I've been mad for 2 days. When I'm mad on the second day, it means I'm mad.
Bruce, right? I only have one question.
I'm mad at the ref, and then by the next day, I go, well, we got a different call in a different game, or even in this game, I'm mad about, shit happens sometimes. But this was a case of justice being overturned, and it just enrages me as a fan of the story.
The only question, Bruce, is what would Curry say?
I can't imagine he's very pleased.
All right.
I'm not a Finn, and I'm upset. I can only imagine, right? If I was a Finn, I would be feeling like Brian Kessler just grabbed Cam Talbot's pad again.
Worst play ever. Oh. Worst call ever.
David, this was worse. This decided the gold medal basically directly. They got it wrong. They got it right on the ice, and then they got it wrong. The Kessler one, they got it wrong on the ice, and they still got it wrong. You know, they just didn't fix it. This one, they actually overturned the right call and made it wrong.
All right. You got the full rant. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.